bucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Text line, you know the drill. You want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's how you interact with me, your show host, if you so desire. And we'll try to make the most of it as we go throughout the program today. Coming up on the program, Shane Stringer will be with us in about a half hour. State lawmaker from Citronelle. He'll be with us. Del Jackson, WVNN, Yellhammer News. You know his resume. He'll be with us in the 10 o'clock hour. And then 11 o'clock hour, Paul Prine. You might remember him, a candidate for mayor, but also was the former police chief. We're top Pritchard. I have a bunch of questions for him, actually. Not like sort of what he thinks of, I guess, the what appears to be. I mean, I suspect they will figure out some kind of solution between now and then. What if you had this momentary lawlessness, no police force? No sheriff, not able to really perform some of the municipal functions because the police department's been disbanded. What is a realistic solution to Pritchard? Does that mean the National Guard at some point? Or maybe that's this. If things don't get better, then you leave the governor no choice but to call in the National Guard. And I suspect a lot of that's a nuclear option. A lot of locals don't want that. But if you don't have a police force and the sheriff, the local sheriff's like, I can deal with the murders and the violent crimes, but some of the other things we're not equipped to do or we can't afford to do, then what's a reasonable option there? I'd be interested to hear what he says about the issue you guys seem to care about on this program, the flock cameras. Only just station cameras everywhere? They're license plate readers. Will that get the job done? You have a municipal government that's vulnerable to corruption. How many bad decisions have been made in the city of Pritchard over the last 40 years? Still, you have to have some kind of element of a civil society there, a public safety. You may not clean up all the blight and all the other poverty and all the other problems, but you can't have this little lawless jurisdiction. Well, what do you do? You don't have the tax revenue to have a big police force there. Can't come rolling in with the armored personnel carriers. What do you do? Someone say, well, just make it part of Mobile. People in Mobile don't want that burden. You want Mobile to be safe. You don't, do you want Mobile to take on that? Probably not. I wouldn't if I lived in Mobile. Pay enough in taxes, you're going to dilute my police force. So we'll get into that, but happy to discuss that throughout the program. The Iran situation is flaring up. I don't think this is good. It's just kind of based on just my sense of things. Some of it is like what you see on social media or in the news, but I just don't think that's working. I don't think the overtures from this administration, people are buying into them. I mean, they're $85 a barrel on oil. It's getting close. Brent's at 90. 90 is the break point, I think. Trump's trying. He's trying to cut the broker some kind of deal with Venezuela or whatever, bring that price down. But what does that suggest? And this is, you know, we hear that and we're supposed to be like, yeah, you know, go Trump. But I think it's just like the Argentinian beef. It's trying to offset a bigger problem. It's trying to be a Band-Aid to impact the market. And the real problem is, hey, you had this war going on here, and it's making it harder to get prices down. What are you going to do? How are you going to resolve it? And the Iranians know you are in that situation. They're going to try to capitalize on it. Those are the facts. Now, we can debate how we got here and why we got here, and I'm sure Mike's firing up his phone right now telling me how evil Israel is. But all that's fine. I think, like, the bigger issue is, like, okay, how are you going to fix this? How are you going to get this done? I don't think you're going to be able to distract anyone with Lake America. How do we feel about that? I kind of bought into the hype about Gulf of America. Oh, that's fine, whatever. This feels a little gimmicky. Going back to the well here. No one's going out to get Lake America T-shirts, are they? And I just think it's having its same impact it does on, like, the DSA, MS Now industrial complex. It's not really something that I think those who are sympathetic to President Trump's cause are like, we got the Gulf of America, Lake America. What do we call the Pacific Ocean? The America Ocean next? Or, you know, I think, okay. We get the idea. The whole issue, though, is, like, I'm telling you guys, whatever you think of these policies, whatever you think of it, what he's trying to do, if you lose in November, none of it matters. You're not going to be able to execute these policies without some support in Congress from Republicans, and the Republicans are out of power, then it's going to be over. Like, do you want a continuation of this? Maybe you don't. And divided government's what you need. Like, if you really are that set against America's involvement in the Middle East in this fashion, then this is your target issue. This is your, you know, number one on your list. Maybe start cheering for Democrats in November. I that's what I would tell you. But I think if you are a believer in the policy and you do want the policy to continue and you do think it's a net positive, then you got to look at this situation and say, but this trajectory is not politically popular throughout the country. Well, I don't care what those people think. Well, you should, because their vote matters. They are going to vote for Democrat members of Congress. And that's how our system works. They are going to vote for Democrats who not only don't think that we should be in the Middle East and that your gas prices should be high because of it, they are going to also be for transing your kids and all the other silly left-wing tropes that come along with a Democrat candidate in 2026. It feels like we should have learned this from George W. Bush as Republicans. But we're here. You can't turn back the clock. Well, we can't let the Iranians dictate. Well, I mean, they have us over a barrel. This is how our system functions. Well, you're just not, you need to be a cheerleader. I'm sorry. I can't do that for you. I mean, we already knew this. We already knew it's going to be a hard election cycle. Just because it always is. Whenever you have a Republican or Democrat president, the other party does well in the midterms. We got a lifeline from the Supreme Court with some redistricting decisions. You got that. That's going to help, but don't blow it. Well, unfortunately, like I said, that's becoming just sort of part of it. So 251-343-0106. The policy matters. I get it. We can have that discussion, but what's going to matter more is the way people are going to view it on a whole scale. And I know I come on this show every day and say that, but there does seem to be an air of desperation right now, trying to enact some kind of Venezuelan oil deal, knowing. Well, did we think, and this, I guess, we can play armchair quarterback here for a moment. Did we think that going in and trying to eliminate this nuclear threat would be easy, that we would be able to do this in this way? That, we'll knock it out and then life will go back to what it always has been. And that hasn't been the case. Whenever I brought this up like a few months ago, and I got a phone call from an elected official in Mobile County. Oh, that's a game plan. This, I worked in the Pentagon. They knew what was going to happen. They had it, but did they take into account the political impact in a midterm election cycle? Did they? 251-343-0106. Something else I want to get to. We'll get to this in the next segment. Doug Jones out there just, I don't know why, but he's out there disparaging the National Guard. More on that in a moment. Stick around. This is a Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. To ride
on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.
Get on me, wanna know, Hank, why do you drink? Hank, why do you roll smoke? Why must you live out the songs that you wrote?
Oh, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. Chase Ringer coming up in the next segment, a state lawmaker from Citronelle, so stick around for that. Doug Jones, I don't know who is watching this other than one of my reporters at 1819 News, 1819news.com, but he does like a live stream on Sunday nights, or maybe, I don't know when he does it, but I'm not watching it. I suspect most of you aren't watching it either, so maybe some of you are. So he is, like, very down on this concept of sending National Guard troops to these crime-ridden areas around the country. One of those has been Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. was a hellscape prior to the National Guard's intervention. It really was. I spent some time out there back in April, May. I can't remember. I guess it would have been April. Even attended a couple of baseball games down at Navy Yard. The Washington Nationals play there. And the way it works, I mean, I lived up there for 8 years. And when I lived up there, you know, I used public transportation. I got around the city. There was not really, I mean, it was never 100% safe. But you didn't feel threatened at all. It was the Obama years. It was the time of parties and pre-COVID festivities. Even pre-Trump, let's say. It was just it was kind of a fun drinking town. When Trump got elected, that sort of all went away in 16. Like, you could feel it, like the enthusiasm kind of like leave the city. Then it got even worse with COVID. And for some reason, they took an emphasis off of public safety, of enforcing crime. Now, it's always been a corrupt city. The police have always been corrupt, and there's all kinds of stories there. But people in that city, I mean, you were having Capitol Hill staffers getting mugged. Carjackings. So they deployed the guard. Doug Jones gets on his webcast or whatever it is, and it's just like, oh, they didn't really do anything. That is just not true. That there have been improvements since the guard was deployed. Let me read you this quote. He says, quote, "The National Guard did a fabulous job of planting flowers, making it look nice and pretty, and cleaning it up. Everyone will tell you, there have been a lot of stories about this recently. The National Guard has had no effect at the drop in crime in Washington, D.C. That's not what they're there for. That's not what they do. It's not what they're trained for. That's not law enforcement authorities. But what he's basically doing is he's talking," this is referring to Tuberville, "talking about Montgomery, and what he's doing is ignoring the crime statistics of Montgomery coming down. Violent crime is coming down. He just doesn't like who runs some of the cities in Alabama, so he's threatening to do that." No, I'm going to tell you, crime, whatever statistic you want to, like, massage, crime may appear to be coming down, but the high-profile, like, drive-by shootings on Atlanta Highway in Montgomery, Alabama, I spend a lot of time in Montgomery. We do this show during session once a week there. You're sitting in your hotel and you hear rounds of gunfire. That's a real thing. But back to the Washington, D.C. part of it, that's absolutely incorrect. You walk around that city and you see a National Guardsman. Do you think that the carjackings are going to be more prevalent or less prevalent? Then it's a deterrent, and it has had a positive impact. You do see these National Guardsmen around town in very high populated, high traffic areas. It has had a positive impact, despite what Doug Jones says or said in his video stream. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is a Jeff Borden Show on FM Talk 106.5. Let it all hang out, cause we got to run to
Amarillo by morning.
to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this on Monday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. Dale Jackson coming up in about an hour, and then Paul Pryan in the 11 o'clock hour, so stick around for that. Joining us now on the line, it is that time. We get to talk to State Representative Shane Stringer. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for hopping on. Well, before we get into like kind of some local things, business of the legislature is picking up a little bit. I saw Carrie Underwood throwing his name in the ring for majority leader, but it does sound like business is kind of ticking up a little bit.
Yeah, we're starting to get more requests for meetings and discussion on legislation for the upcoming session, and a lot of stuff going on. So I'm sure from now until then, it's going to get extremely busy. And usually December, January is really crazy right before the session.
Did you see what's your reaction to, I guess, the prison borrowing? We're adding another $100 and some odd million to the prison solution. I mean, did you A, see it coming, and B, does this seem like this is going to work?
Yeah, I figured whenever they put that in the legislation that we passed, I didn't like it, and I was afraid that was going to be a problem. I don't know, man. It's we've got to find a way to get our hands around that problem, because we are just writing checks for that prison system, and we've got to find a way to get it under control and see if we can't do something with it in other ways. But yeah, I was afraid that was coming.
Yeah, and will it be enough? Will they have to come back for more? I mean, it kind of, I don't know, this is the one like big red flag to me. We got just just a few months of Kay Ivey left, and we're doing a lot of things with the financing and you know, is this something that we need to be doing at this moment, or should we be? And I know she's would disagree, and her administration would, but I don't know, this sort of lame duck situation and doing a lot of things before she leaves office is a red flag.
Yeah, I don't know all the facts and what we've got going on related to it, but I was concerned that this would that we would wind up, you know, coming back with more and more on these prisons. You know, you're starting to see more change orders and that kind of stuff coming around on some of these big projects more and more, and just, you know, wish there was a little bit more transparency and accountability to make sure that we're spending the money wisely and making sure that it's absolutely needed. And, you know, we're not just padding somebody's pocket somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's these are valid critiques. Hey, I guess the Pritchard situation's in the news. You're, you know, kind of familiar with this issue, disbanded the police force. The sheriff may walk away from it if they don't get some kind of deal made. I don't think the sheriff, even if you have the Mobile County Sheriff's Office doing regular patrols and kind of filling in, that still seems like a Band-Aid. They got to do something there. What do they need to do?
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I think the Sheriff's Department would even have to have assistance. I know we've done things, that Joint Crime Task Force up in Montgomery, that might be an option to do something like that here. If we could get Aaliyah, more of the federal partners involved, and let's really invest some time in Pritchard and get in there and kind of clean things up, slow it down. All of that didn't happen overnight, and it's not going to be fixed overnight. And the sheriff's done a phenomenal job with what he's had to work with, and I'm proud of what they've done. But on that same note, they can't just continue to keep doing that without adjusting budgets, personnel, and doing that. Because in order to put people over there, they're having to either take from other areas or do what they've been doing, which is blowing up their overtime budget.
Well, and so, you know, this is a city with no resources, a very small tax base. They're not going to have the ability. They're not going to be able to afford a you know, what you would need as far as public safety goes. It's going to take some kind of outside help. And what does that look like, I guess?
Well, your police and fire are typically your two largest budget items for a city. And I think that if they were to take their budgeted amount for their police department and put that toward a contract with the sheriff's department and then let the sheriff, you know, be responsible for setting up some joint task force if need be, we can help through the legislature if that's needed, but I don't think it is. You know, and get, whether it be the National Guard, whether it be the state troopers to come in and supplement and ride with these deputies or run into units. The presence of officers prevents crime. And the more officers we've got over there, the less likely for crime to happen.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, like, getting them, finding them, and paying them. So it's going to take some kind of state response. And you mentioned the National Guard, and I know there's a bunch of legal hurdles here. But, you know, that seems like that would have to be a very temporary thing, because it does seem, if we did that, and it may work, but it does seem very cost prohibitive.
Oh, absolutely. It needs to be temporary. And, you know, the ideal situation is to do what we've done in Montgomery is, you know, if they were able to contract with the sheriff and let them, they are established. They're doing a good job over there already. If we could do that, get some troopers, maybe other agencies involved and getting extra manpower, you know, even if they had to start some kind of professional reserve unit or something to ride two per car to put with the deputies, that would help. But there's ways to address this to get it under control. And then once it's under control, if the city wants to reestablish their police department, then that would be a great time to start planning it out. They wouldn't be in a hurry and on a timeline, and they can start kind of do like the city of Sims did and start integrating, you know, back with the police department and eventually phase the sheriff's department back out again.
But there's just no, right now, as we talk here today, it doesn't seem like there's at least it had been talked about, and maybe there's some ideas floating around, but it's that exit plan. And, you know, first off, it's acknowledging that, okay, this is what has to be done in the interim, and I don't think we're there. But once we get to whatever that may be, then formulating this, like you said, the sort of the Sims model, you know, it doesn't sound like we're even talking about that.
Yeah, and I don't know what they're talking about or not. I've not been involved in any of that whatsoever. But, you know, hopefully that is some talks that they're either having or about to have and, you know, kind of come up with a long-term goal here. And if they come up with a 3 to 5 year, maybe even a 10-year plan, I think they could accomplish it and could turn that around. You know, department around and get things right. Those citizens deserve protection and they deserve law enforcement availability, and they just do not have it up until the sheriff's department.
Because it seems like that's like sort of like you've got to clear that hurdle before all these other social and economic woes can be fixed, because that is like maintaining a civil society, very fundamental. So, like, they could talk about, you know, all these ideas about economic development and trying to inspire some kind of activity or whatever, but you can't do any of that. You really can't until you kind of lock it down to making it a place that's safe.
Absolutely. Law and order is the fundamental principle of a city and government, and without that, you have nothing else. So it matters not the rest of it without getting that. So you're going to have to fix that. You're going to have to get it back in place and get it up and running and, you know, get it where it needs to be in order for that city to prosper and grow and do better.
Well, on the other side, now we're in limbo now, and there could be a point where you're not going to have those as heavy of a sheriff presence, and you don't have a police force. What does that look like? Even you know, does it look third world Mogadishu? I can't imagine that if it gets to that point, and that's sort of where we're at. What happens and what should the state would have to get involved, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. They've already, having issues where there's a concern whether they do or do not have insurance, like municipal insurance that covers police, fire, the city workers and all of that. And right now it's has the appearance that they do not. So I don't know. They've got so many hurdles to cross, and this is such a widespread issue. It's going to be like eating an elephant. They're just going to have to do it one bite at a time and fix one issue at a time until they can get things where they need to be. And if they can't, then I don't know. They can't be a city without having law and order and without having government, without somebody having been able to take care of the criminal element on the streets.
Yeah, because, you start talking about that aspect of it. I mean, this is like the path to unincorporation or something, and then what happens? But, I mean, this has been something that's probably been festering for way too long, for decades. And
oh, absolutely.
And kind of in polite society in Mobile, we don't talk about Pritchard, but guess what? The day has come when something's got to happen here. Push comes to shove. And this is a place that really self-governance hasn't really taken off like as hoped. It's just been allowed to kind of spiral out of control.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole reason we've got to have some checks and balances in place for not just Pritchard, but all across government throughout the state and the country, is to keep situations like this from happening. I know there's been a lot of federal grants and federal money that's been given to Pritchard over the years. And, we just, with all that's happened with the water board and now we're dealing with the police department, there has got to be some checks and balances and some transparency on where the money that's being sent in to help fix things is going.
Yeah. Cause I can't imagine putting more money into it. They've thrown money at the problem and the money gets misappropriated. And you think about this too, Representative, we talk about, I think it takes a lot for the federal government prosecutors to come in and go after bad actors in these sort of situations. It must have gotten really out of control somewhere along the way. And like I said, it just seems like the locals kind of turned a blind eye to it, and the federal government said, okay, well, here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you've seen several high-profile cases over the last couple of years and in the media here where officers have been given a Gigulo letter, which means they were falsely testifying or not putting accurate information in the reports, which has led to either mistrials or cases being dismissed on, like, murder cases, high-profile cases. And that absolutely cannot happen. The families have already been a victim to losing a loved one, but then to have the case or the suspect released because the law enforcement element has not done their job properly is just pure heartbreaking.
Well, it's sort of this, like if you're in this law enforcement space, it's hard enough to get police staffing in places that don't have these systemic problems. Who wants to go work there? Who wants to take a job with the Pritchard Police Department? And how do you, they obviously can't incentivize it. Then what do you do there?
Yeah, that's going to be a major, major problem. Always has been, and it's going to continue to be one. And that is another reason I think that the Sheriff's Department doing a contract with them would be a better option at the time, go in there, clean it up, slow things down, get things turned around, and maybe at some point in the future, starting a police department from the ground up. In that way, new reputation, new benefits, new better pay, that kind of stuff, and get things turned around, you know, to where it needs to be, to where they can recruit and hire and retain some good officers.
Well, Representative, this is one to watch, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll talk about it some more, I'm sure. But thanks for hopping on this morning.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me on.
State Representative Shane Stringer, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Text line 251-343-0106. Tim writes, Jeff, it's probably actually better than it should be. I can remember a fact when they only had like one or two cars that were running so they could respond to calls. I think we should turn Paul Prine loose and fix it. Well, I mean, we'll see. Mike, the podcast 1819 Postal Government School Education Indoctrination is really good. I'm sure the AEA-owned Republicans will go hill heard it. Their response will be opposite, but I really appreciate it. Unnamed texter, most of the prosecutions are local state prosecutions. Unnamed texter, for your piece on Breitbart, do you think Rahm Emanuel will have a shot at breaking the Democratic Party in two? If so, that would be great for Republicans. I don't. The Democratic Party relies on the DSA backers for any kind of turnout, any kind of enthusiasm. Who's excited to vote for Chuck Schumer? Well, let me get some of that Chuck Schumer. Who's excited for Hakeem Jeffries? Who's excited for these establishment Democrats on the Democrat side? Where do they draw their support from? And I don't think that Rahm Emanuel could say whatever. The thing that they have going for them is they have won the grassroots, the DSA guys, and the establishment where they are. The one advantage they have is going to always be the money. And then sort of this is the fundamental problem for Democrats, establishment Democrats. They have paid lip service. They have, you know, talked about these socialist ideas with no intention of ever really promoting them or enacting them. That they'll collect the checks from the, say, for example, the health insurance industry, the pharmaceuticals, tech. And then they'll do this on the campaign trail. They'll talk about government takeovers, imposing onerous restrictions, really cracking down on the wealthiest among us and charging them more taxes, but knowing full well that that's not something that's ever going to happen. And then this will go on for a while. I'm surprised it's gone on as long as it has. And these people who keep voting for these same kind of Democrats start looking at it like, what are we voting for? Or we're voting for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton to lose a presidential election? Well, Joe Biden didn't lose, but you know what I'm saying here? It's like Joe Biden, we voted for him. He wins by some stretch of the imagination. And what did he do? What was his signature accomplishment? They passed a lot of spending, but the spending didn't come to the people. It went to, like, bailout unions and big government contracts for tech companies or solar panels or whatever, subsidies. None of that really trickled down. And I think at some point, these activists who live and die this stuff in the Democratic Party were just like, to hell with this. We're going to go with the crazy Mondani guy. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.